Hello there, and welcome back to the Meaningful Media podcast. Retail media is big business. Bain & Company predict the market will grow 12% annually to about $140 billion in 2026, picking up share from other digital advertising channels in the process. The trend will be even stronger in the US, where retail media spending is forecast to grow by over 16% annually over the next 3 years. But what is retail media? You're probably hearing terms like retail media networks, shoppable ads, connected commerce, and if you're anything like me, you need some expert help navigating this fast evolving space. Thinking about retail media as a media experience also helps. Joining us on this episode, we have two brilliant experts to help us do just this. First, Molly Hopp, EVP of Market, Havas Media Network. And introducing Alex Haas, General Manager and Chief Revenue Officer at Miracle. Molly, Alex, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
Very excited to have you. So before we get going, tell us a little bit about yourselves, your role, your journey in this industry and the brilliant world of retail media. Molly, can we come to you first?
Yeah, so I joined Havas. I think I'm almost 7 months old now. So it seems like I have a little bit of time under my feet. And I run Market for North America. And Market here is really defined as e-commerce, retail media, and everything that, you know, entails, which we'll talk more about how much that does entail when it comes to the growth of retail media. A bit of my journey, I actually started in 2002 as a digital ad trafficker at one of the first agencies that was doing digital in Chicago, which was fun. I was trafficking Kellogg's Kids cereal ads when you could still do that. So Fruit Loops and Apple Jacks.
Wow.
And, you know, 50% click-through rates on those. So I miss those days in terms of getting those response rates. But fast forward, I fell in love with performance media. And in 2018, I was with a large performance agency. I was loving it, but I was also starting to get a little bit bored. And luckily at the time, that's when Amazon really started to blow up and said, hey, to all of our clients, you can spend a lot of money with us. We have a lot of ad dollars that you could be investing and driving direct to a conversion. So our clients were coming to us and saying, what do we do about this? That's at the time that we built a commerce practice for this large holding company at a time that was 2019, 2020, that pandemic hit us, and a handful of us, two or three, all of a sudden became the most interesting people in the entire holding company in terms of solving for e-commerce for every possible brand and vertical out there. It was intense, but also one of the most exciting times of my career, and also what led to my love of the e-com and retail space, and ultimately what brought me here to Havas.
Love that. And I love that story about you guys becoming the most interesting people in this massive, massive org overnight. And I think we're going to get into some of that growth. But Alex, coming to you next.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Alex Haase. I've actually been with Miracle going on 2 years now. And I have a bit of an interesting journey that's led to where I am today. Starting with my first business I was involved in was running a franchise of a bungee jumping company that my brother had started, who's very entrepreneurial. That led to my first professional job in sales. And then I joined my first startup in my late 20s, and then have been a part of a series of different companies at various stages of investment and size, taking on responsibility for sales, marketing, and client success. And in conjunction with that, really have been focused in retail and consumer packaged goods. So my most recent two stints with companies have been in the e-commerce space. The company prior to Miracle was in cross-border e-commerce, which is something that's also growing quite rapidly. And then here at Miracle, we've been focused on marketplaces, but have expanded our portfolio to include a retail media solution as well.
Love that. So Alex, kind of coming back to you here straight away, can you perhaps through the lens of Miracle, but also in the wider space, set a little bit of context for us for retailers and brands operating in digital media today and what's coming next in this world of commerce?
Sure. Yeah. And I think when I reflect on a question like that, I go back to the early days of e-commerce where it was essentially wrought with friction, right? Uh-huh. You had, you know, speaking of my personal experiences, but I'm sure everyone else has had similar experience. where, you know, you went to try to find something and you had difficulty finding a product via e-commerce. You saw what the cost of shipping was and you said, you got to be kidding me. And then you bought something, and when you went to return it, it was going to cost half of the price of the product that you bought. And what's happened over time is really a significant reduction in some of those friction points. You know, and Amazon obviously gets a lot of credit for some of what they've done to try to help streamline that whole experience. But if you're a traditional retailer, you were kind of grappling with, how do I address this new world? How do I combine that with in-store experience? Am I going to be cannibalizing from my retail experience? There is the brands who are now saying, well, how do I, should I be directly interacting with my consumers? And how do I make sure that they understand the full portfolio of goods that I have available to me? And essentially what everything has evolved to is where, you know, consumers want to buy everything anywhere and have it delivered, you know, very, very quickly. And in order to accommodate that, the retailers obviously have to come up with a way to address that need, because you ultimately want to meet your consumer based on where their demands are. And so the manifestation of Miracle and how we came to be is on that basis of this, you know, this model of a marketplace that Amazon established. We have essentially came up with about 12, 13 years ago, a marketplace solution that allowed any traditional retailer to expand and have a similar type of assortment that an Amazon or a marketplace would, and also these pure play marketplaces that might be focused in a particular subsegment of the market, you know, serving a particular group of people or businesses in a B2B landscape. We come to where we are today, and you have a situation where you're trying to service those consumers. And if you think about the retailer, they're trying to make sure that the customers get what they're looking for, what they need, and also be exposed to some of those things that they might not be aware of. And that's where the brands layer in as well. Brands want to make sure that they're serving up opportunities for consumers to buy the products that they need. And so the whole notion of retail media is really about those things. It's not just about trying to sell advertising dollars, but it's actually trying to service the consumer and the customer.
Love that. I think if we can kind of go to a bit of a higher level view, and this is, gosh, this is, can be challenging, right? But if you were to define retail media sort of succinctly for someone who's not necessarily in the nuts and bolts, what would you say? How would you define retail media?
Molly, you want to take that one?
Yeah, let's work on the succinct part here. So how I've been answering that question recently is that I think how you think about retail and how you think about retail media are very different. As we talk about, and you put the big numbers out there at the beginning in terms of the retail media growth, it really is focused, yes, on platforms. So maybe what you traditionally think of as being on Amazon and seeing a sponsored listing. But ultimately, where a lot of the growth is coming from is the ability to do two things. One is to leverage retailer first-party data off-platform. So think about now Walmart getting to offer their 1P shopper data to anybody out there who would like to purchase it through a DSP like a Trade Desk. The other piece is really focused on social commerce in terms of how much people are willing to invest and how many people are turning to social for their actual e-commerce and shopper experience. So I don't know how concise I was, but I think in terms of the growth of retail media, it's focused on the development or the birth of retail media networks or the growth of it. It is the monetization of 1P retailer data off platform. And it's that growth and boom, especially in the US in terms of social commerce and it being where people are turning for all or for a lot of their shopping behaviors.
That is really interesting, because when we think about this concept of media experience, we talk about it a lot here. We don't think of a media experience as sort of simply a media plan or buying some media. We think of it as something really happening in the moment for the customer, the consumer, and MX being quite closely related to CX, to customer experience. And and I thought it was actually a brilliant and very succinct answer there, kind of spoke to a lot of that, right? Where we might think of retail media as a channel, as a kind of ad format. It's in fact something that seems to be appearing all through the the digital ecosystem and I guess the customer experience as well. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. And I don't know if this is necessarily where you expected me to go, but I'm going to take it there. I think what's interesting going beyond just thinking about retail media, but it really is people or us advertisers really trying to wrap our head around D2C. Mm. And the reason that I bring that up is because as you do talk about the entire consumer journey, D2C and retail and driving to that retail experience is oftentimes what we're trying to solve for.
So D2C is direct to consumer?
Yes, direct to consumer. So a lot of brands, a lot of clients are coming to us and they're saying, hey, we know that consumers have that expectation that they can purchase anywhere at any time. Uh-huh. But how does that impact our media and how do we think about that? And then it depends on vertical CPG. It's going to be very different than a higher price point product. But they're also saying, listen, if I can sell my product myself by bringing my audience to my platform, I make the best margin. That's the most revenue profitable for me. So what percent of my media investment should I spend in actually capturing someone and driving them to my brand experience? And where is it that they're not brand loyal, but they're retailer loyal? And we drive someone or we bring them to a retailer where they're more comfortable in purchasing or maybe where they consider that retailer more of their CRM experience. So I know I wandered a little bit there, but I do think that that's interesting, or it's a very much topical conversation when it comes to not only thinking about retail media, but the impact of the ability to purchase and shop everywhere and how that's changing the discussion around media plans with our clients.
No, definitely. I think that's such a brilliant answer because it is quite a new paradigm. And one of the things that you focused on is where that actual commerce action takes place, where that point of sale takes place. But not only that, the actual impact on brand building as well, right? Retail media is a brand experience and in and of itself helps to build brands.
Yep.
The other comment that I would make around that is that, retail media is not a new concept. Digital retail media is something that is obviously blossoming quite significantly, but it's really about being able to engage consumers in that path to purchase so that you can actually influence and or expose them to things that they might not have otherwise been exposed to. So that's, again, where brands and retailers, you're either trying to complement what they're already on that path to purchase, or you're trying to identify something that, that you think they might benefit from.
That's a really interesting point. Can you give us like a worked example of that?
We operate in the world of e-commerce. And one of the things that has been, again, fascinating is that traditional retailers evolving into leveraging the marketplace model. One of the things that we saw very quickly with traditional e-commerce platforms is they actually would not expose some of the products that are available via this marketplace model. And again, it's probably worth giving a little bit of a foundational understanding for everyone, is that you have traditional retailer e-commerce that they sell their own products that they have in their distribution centers that you typically would see in their stores. And one of the things that retailers are trying to do frequently is expand the assortment of products that they can actually offer. And so you want to do that, but you don't necessarily want to acquire the inventory because that's very expensive. And so one of the business models that you can apply is this notion of marketplace where you have third-party sellers that are able to sell their products on a retailer's e-commerce site. There's another variation of that, which is called dropship, and that is where a retailer may have a brand or a vendor that actually does the fulfillment of that product. And again, it's a bit of a different commercial arrangement. But getting to my point is that what's interesting is that in a traditional e-commerce retail experience, many of the personalization engines and the mechanisms when people are looking for products didn't actually service and be able to expose all of those products that were being made available through marketplace sellers. And so one of the things that we've done is continue to fill the gap with new solutions that then when a consumer is coming to market to buy something and they're on that path of purchase, that you actually can show them a product that is from that marketplace. And again, going a step further is our retail media solution, our digital retail media solution that we've also come to market with, allows you to expose with advertising those marketplace sellers as well. So again, in a traditional retail media solution that exists even today, they're actually missing that whole component of being able to provide and expose those products to the consumers. And that's a missed opportunity, both, you know, financially, but then also in the spirit of servicing the consumer.
So that's a really interesting point, because I guess the original Amazon model was, you know, Amazon didn't really own any inventory. They had space in their warehouses that you would try to list your stock in and sell through Amazon. Was that the case, or have I got that completely wrong?
No, that's, I mean, the very basics of the model are you're creating a marketplace or a e-commerce experience, but the selling is actually being done by sellers. And, right. You know, we know that Amazon has since kind of had their own products that they've brought to market and that they do sell, but the predominant model by far is sellers selling on their site. And again, that's essentially how Miracle, when it was originally founded, was allowing traditional retailers to also provide this marketplace model to supplement what they were currently doing.
Which is really interesting, because I guess one of the things about Amazon as the everything store was that long tail that having sellers being able to list on the platform allowed. So you could kind of find everything, which in itself created some maybe challenges as well as opportunities for consumers, right? You had infinite choice, but then it placed it upon you to sort of sort through things, which then impacts brands, which then impacts brand selection, et cetera, et cetera.
So then adding to that is now you start to talk about trying to protect your brand. Mm. And as we know, you know, using Amazon as an example, they typically aren't, for instance, strongly represented with luxury brands. However, you have other retailers that obviously that's core to their value proposition to their consumers. And now you have the ability to offer those luxury brands with the experience that the retailer has established and have that full representation of what that brand's offering is. So that's what we've seen, you know, in particular, again, when you look at traditional retail, is there's the ability to kind of carry that value proposition and that relationship that the retailer has and be representative of everything that the brand wants to accomplish as well.
Interesting. So again, the importance of branding, but also that consistency of experience, that consistency of what we'd call media experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to comment really quickly. I don't know if you did see this, but I was reading a really interesting article just in terms of Amazon really putting pressure on their sellers, right? Because I think it's 60% now of their platform are the sellers, in terms of putting an additional fee and regulations in terms of the distribution that is going to start to impact a lot of our clients that are sellers on Amazon. So I don't know if you saw anything around that, but I think for Miracle and in terms of your offering, it's already compelling, but giving that opportunity to both expand your distribution as well as then put the ad dollars behind it are going to become more and more compelling. So I just wanted to toss that in there because I think it's really topical. And I do think we're going to see a shift of inventory and investment on the behalf of especially those mid-sized sellers on Amazon. And, once I think this is put in place April 1.
So Molly, following up on that, can I ask from a consumer perspective, one of the things that I'm noticing is on some of the websites I use, I'm here in the UK, so it will be John Lewis for our UK. Really sort of doxing myself with my habits, but might also be sort of Walmart. We're seeing ads on kind of things like Uber as well, and the various delivery platforms. Is that related to this pressure on sellers on Amazon? How do those relate to the kind of Amazon marketplaces? Walmart obviously building out their own marketplace.
Yeah. So I'll answer it in a couple ways. One, maybe the most cynical is, Amazon has proven to all retailers out there that there's the opportunity to monetize both your platform as well as, like, in your first party audience data. And I think that that's really driven, which I understand it's a new business model for a lot of retailers, big to small out there to expand essentially how they bring in revenue. So I think that's really motivated a lot of them. It's less in terms of maybe opening up a marketplace for sellers, unfortunately. And the reason I say I'm cynical is because now there is just an influx of ability to capitalize on this 1P data as well as to purchase all the way through Uber. And also the fees that are being associated quite often to purchase this 1P data is starting to maybe outweigh the value. And I think that that's a role of an agency to really understand the value of capturing a 1P retail, you know, capturing someone through that first party retailer data, and when it doesn't necessarily pay out based on the fees that are being associated with it.
This is really interesting. And I think it's getting into a kind of critical path for brands, for retailers, for clients through this industry, through this change in the industry. So let's kind of, if we can, take this right back to basics in terms of what is first party data, how's it used in retail media, and you talked about valuing first party data there. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, I mean, so previously, I'd take us back maybe 3-4 years. There wasn't a ton that you could do when it was off platform, you know, display video buys, that you could really still capture someone in terms of their shopping behavior or what there is, or specifically their purchase behavior on a retailer, right? Because, you know, easiest way is that retailers are still the walled gardens, right? So you can't follow your audience into a marketplace and you can't follow your audience out of the marketplace. And so that was always a challenge for both the retail media teams as well as the brand teams who are trying to understand how you put that into your overall kind of consumer journey. Now, all of these retailers, majority of them out there, I believe, have essentially, in layman's terms, pooled their 1P data and they sold it to a lot of partners who then offer off-platform ability to leverage that data and target people wherever they are on the internet. And so that's causing a bit of a challenge for a couple of reasons. One, in terms of people like me who are often tasked with figuring out how you invest with Amazon, how much of that off Amazon investment doesn't make sense? How much of that off Walmart investment doesn't make sense to draw back, right? But then the other challenge is now we have these large programmatic teams who are trying to build these audience strategies to activate off of this, as well as build these clean rooms to do that. So how do you then decision on when is that 1P Walmart shopper audience data more valuable to me? Is the retail media or the person focused on driving that conversion on Walmart versus more valuable potentially for that brand messaging that's happening, you know, that there's also a budget assigned to that is also happening. So it's really, where is that value now of that 1P and what role does it play from brand to performance to e-com?
And how's the ability to activate or move or address first-party 1P data different in retail versus other formats or other activations? Or is that actually the wrong way of thinking about it?
I don't think it's the wrong way to think about it. I think to me, to maybe again, some skepticism, but it's almost becoming less and less valuable because it's more and more accessible.
Interesting.
And so, so we can now, if you think about a large partner, a large DSP partner, you can include retailer 1P data in your audience targeting just as you can any other type of, you know, demographic or variable.
Interesting. So it's becoming another data targeting opportunity, another layer that should be considered in media experience, effectively.
Yep, exactly.
So let's talk about, we've kind of covered scalability. I want to ask, is there something here around the exchange of data that we're seeing between consumers and ultimately retailers? There's a lot of challenge, certainly within Europe, Digital Services Act. Obviously, we have kind of cookies going away in Chrome. One of the things that Molly and I talked about was the sort of transformation of the web, but the experience of advertising on the internet. And now we're seeing some really seismic shifts. We're seeing these retail ad experiences, shoppable ads, social commerce, which we should talk more about in a moment. But I wonder if this is a kind of new way of monetizing media, and I wonder if there are entirely new media experiences. We're already seeing experiments with shoppable ads in connected TV. Is it an interesting way of looking at it as a kind of potentially entirely new way of doing advertising?
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to what Alex was saying earlier, which I think is really interesting, is shopper marketing and in-store, in brick and mortar, is one of the first ways that people were advertised to, right? And so now we've had the shift, everything that we've talked about in terms of being able to reach anybody anywhere. It's interesting because it's not like it's just going back into brick and mortar, going back necessarily, but I do feel like immersive experiences are going to have a flux this year and continue to be so. And it's almost a return to what it used to be, right? So an example, which isn't necessarily what you were hinting towards or speaking to, but met with a group last week who builds commercials for radios, for the radio station that they sell to big grocers. And then you work on making your ad sound like it's part of that actual radio station so that you can impact someone at a specific location within the retail environment. Obviously, in-store radio isn't new, but the ability to launch it based on how many people are in the store, where they are in the store, is something that it's bringing it back to how it was. But it's also, you know, obviously making it something that is informed by a ton of data as well as location data, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. And so I'll add to that, Molly, which is, and I like the way that you said that it's not really a step back, it's an evolution of whatever opportunities are available. And a little plug for Havas is that, you know, part of what you guys can end up doing is helping everybody navigate what those changing landscapes are, what's available, where it makes sense to invest. And so I don't really think of it as a step backward. It's just different than what was, and it's going to continue to be different and evolve over the next 5 years and 10 years. But that's the beauty of it. And the one thing that's pretty clear is that marketers are going to take full advantage and maximize what is available to them, and they want to be smart about how they make their investments. And again, that's a huge part of what I think Havas would bring to the table.
Love that. Thank you, Alex. So let's turn to social commerce. I try not to editorialize too much in these conversations, but I love social commerce and I did not think I would. I have been buying on TikTok shops and it's just a really interesting experience. So how does social commerce fit into this?
So social commerce, I would actually say, is a bit of a big hairy beast that we're all trying to navigate right now. Maybe fair, maybe not 100% fair. But I think that there were a lot of wins, specifically when it comes to TikTok in your example, and advertisers and some retailers being really smart about building a shopping experience that's organic to the environment that it's in. But I do think there's a tendency to sway way the other way and try to force a shopping experience through paid applications that aren't necessarily desired or maybe even logical when it comes to the time that you're reaching someone and where you're reaching them and what you're asking them to purchase. So, I mean, it's not going away. It's going to continue to blow up. And I think it's one of the most interesting channels. But I do think it's one of those channels as an advertiser that we're going to get right as many times as we get wrong in the next year or 2 years, and really understanding what consumers want, what people want in terms of their social interaction, and where you can play a role within that that's not interruptive.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think we do have a tendency sometimes to get very excited about these kind of things in our industry and these kind of experiences. The reality is, and hey, maybe I'm wrong, we'll look at it in our end of year review, but FMCGs, CPGs, I guess, are not going to be doing great volumes through TikTok shop. Don't know.
I agree with you. Yeah. I think some might try, but I don't think they should.
Maybe that is my opinion. Maybe it's wrong. So it is quite a different experience. And again, I think it comes back to these ideas of marketplaces, which Alex, you elucidated so perfectly for us, is it is another kind of marketplace that is doing a specific thing. And there are challenges around, you know, getting data out of it, back to your points around 1P first party data, Molly. So it's really interesting that this, even in this conversation, as we've talked about retail media, it's expanded into this incredibly complex, hairy, I love the phrase you used, Molly, hairy beast. Was that right? but one that has this great opportunity. And I think, you know, that's what you, Molly, and your team here at Havas are focused on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We are trying to solve every aspect of it. And I think a really smart way that we've gone about it is really thinking about how you use the data to figure out where there is the strongest growth opportunity. So maybe a bit of a plug, but also honestly, a reason I joined Havas was our forecast tool that we have built. It's proprietary to us, and it really analyzes every input, every metric that impacts the operational, the paid, the organic side of not just marketplaces, which you would think of, but D2C and social, so that we can help our clients, help brands understand where there's the biggest opportunity for growth and where actually they'll meet that, you know, their destiny in terms of how big they can grow within that given marketplace or with their brand.com.
I love this. This is the tool that helps us tame this hairy beast.
Exactly. Much better way of saying it. So, yeah, I think it's definitely continuing to evolve. And I think the biggest challenge of the forecast is just evolving to the maturation of the media networks and making sure that we're building in a way that we understand what the full opportunity is to influence specific environments, both in terms of retailer marketplaces as well as social environments. But I think it's a really good starting point to have that conversation of what is the growth opportunity.
Nice. So a client, a brand can come, use the tool to say, well, okay, how should I be allocating this? How should I think about investment testing? What's the most relevant to kind of start to chart a path through what can be quite a complex landscape?
Yep.
Alex, we are going to come to you now for a little bit of some future facing things. Because innovation is only increasing. And you over at Mirakl had some exciting innovations, some AI, some generative AI things that you're doing with the platform. Can you talk us through that, what innovation looks like in the next year or so?
I think you should ask one of the AI chatbots that question, but I'll give it a try. So interestingly enough, and again, Mirakl being very innovative, you know, bringing ideas and solving for things that may not have been foreseen as products or solutions that were necessary. We've been using AI for quite some time. So even within the product, and there's some very simple things that we've done, at least they seem simple, although in execution are not that simple. But things like onboarding huge product catalogs and having those be accurate, the ability to enhance and enrich product data so that, again, when things like search and whatnot are used and you're trying to expose the best possible representation of a brand or a product, that is all showing itself well. So we've been doing it for quite some time, well in advance of, you know, ChatGPT. And then in conjunction with that, we actually have initiatives on the business as a whole that we drive. And so what I mean by that is there's a product dimension associated with it, but there's also how do we service our customers more effectively through, you know, client success, and how does AI actually help with that? We've even started utilizing it as a mechanism for our commercial motion and our go-to-market and how we do our outreach and trying to be very bespoke. And so I call it account-based marketing at scale. But in my role trying to help the business grow, it's actually been a cornerstone of how we've established our strategy for the future. So it's really that kind of mixed bag. But, you know, we're so passionate about it that we actually track and monitor proofs of concept, ideas, and things that are in flight across all the different functions of the business. I'll make one comment related to AI as a concept. Mm-hmm. One of the things that has fascinated me personally is the spectrum of opinions of what the impact is going to be and whether it should be regulated or not. And so, you know, as I've continued to try to absorb and learn as much as I can, it's quite amazing how you have some people that represent the sky is falling and it's the end of the world in the next 5 years. And then there are others that see it as a great step and progression of technology.
It's a really fascinating coming together of these two amazing growth areas, and, you know, looking far to the future, or maybe not that far, already seeing some experiments, some innovation with sales experiences, with artificially generated avatars for brands, for individual shopping experiences. We're seeing, of course, our first entirely synthetic social influencers, which is a crazy world, as well as just the ability to use some of the raw compute horsepower to increase things like marketplace reach, as you were talking around, and some of those business problems to make these marketplaces ever bigger, ever more exciting, and crucially improve, we hope, the media experience for consumers. So very exciting look ahead. You have guided us brilliantly through the exciting world of retail media. I felt like I have learned a heck of a lot today. So, is everyone ready for our Meaningful Media Fast Five? Molly, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go. What is your meaningful media right now?
I love the New York Times games, the crossword spelling bee connections.
Love it. Big spelling bee fan, even though I'm not very good at spelling. What is the media that you start your day with?
Morning Joe. I love Morning Joe. I love the news, specifically Mika, and all of her messaging around women empowerment. I just love to start my day with them.
Love that. What media do you turn to when you're looking to get inspired?
Honestly, it's Spotify. I love just listening to, typically now it's bands that I loved earlier in my career, just to inspire me and get me excited.
What is your media guilty pleasure?
I think this qualifies. We just got ourselves a Nintendo Switch and have been 90 nostalgia playing Super Mario Brothers for the last several weeks now.
It totally does. And as a gamer, I'm very excited. So I think that's only the second time we've had gaming. So yeah, love that. And love that as a sort of family media experience. You can only have one media platform for the rest of your life. Which is it and why?
I mean, again, I think it would have to go back to music. If I only had one, just having access through Spotify to every artist out there, I think that's the one I'd go with.
Alex, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. What is your meaningful media right now?
So I would give a different answer professionally and personally, but I would say I consume a lot in various different media types. But the one that's been accelerating more, and this is a plug for you, Ben, is podcasts.
Yeah,
so that's
cool. I love that. favorite podcast at the moment? Any recommendations for us?
All In is probably the go-to.
Absolutely love it.
My appetite started with Smartless, though, which is also quite entertaining.
Yes, very good. Very good. Yep. What's the media you start your day with?
So I actually finish every day with a heavy dose of Google News, which is almost like the start of the next day, if you will. And then on occasion, if the weather is terrible and I'm running on a treadmill, which I hate, but I do it, I will watch documentaries. I love learning about nonfiction subjects.
What media do you turn to when you're looking to get inspired?
I would say YouTube jumps to the top. And I continue to be fascinated with all of the talent that is out in the world that we never were exposed to when I was younger. And YouTube is the perfect vehicle to deliver it.
Yeah, the algorithm can get a bit tricky sometimes, but gosh, it throws up some fascinating things. What is your media guilty pleasure?
That would be Netflix, specifically the docuseries format, because I love the bite-sized chunks and it actually allows you to go to bed when you get tired instead of feeling like you have to stay up till 1 a.m.
Really interesting. Okay, you've got one media platform for the rest of your life. Which one is it and why?
I'm going to date myself here, books. And I would say they can be audiobooks or physical books, specifically nonfiction adventure if I had to pick a genre. But there's no substitute for a good quality book.
Favorite recommendation for us?
Into the Wild.
Ah, it's an excellent, excellent shout. Well, okay, listen, that was amazing. We really appreciate your answers today.
It was a pleasure.
Agreed.
It really was.
That's a perfect place to finish the episode. A big thanks to you, our listener, for tuning in. Do remember to subscribe to the Meaningful Media Podcast on your preferred platform so you don't miss any of our episodes. Once again, thanks. Join me, Ben Downing, soon for more perspectives on meaningful media, the media that matters.